Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Litecoin Underground podcast. As I always say, it's the best place to be. I hope you enjoy you coming back every time. I appreciate you guys coming back every time. We've got a kind of a fun episode today. Robbie Coleman from the Litecoin Foundation is on. He was at the summit, got to meet him there. He gave a really great presentation about this idea he had recently on a trip of VPM, not VPN, VPM as in money, virtual private money instead of a virtual private network. And he kind of brainstormed this thing, knocked out a white paper in a matter of days. He'll tell you the story. But the idea, you know, was really interesting at the time. And then it kind of, I don't know, faded away. I came back and it wasn't really prominent. And I had a tweet, I want to say it was probably going back a couple weeks now, where, I don't know, just for the heck of it, I was like, you know, I'm not saying MWeb anymore. I'm just going to use VPM from now on, just because I liked it and I think it makes sense. And some of what we do in crypto is we overcomplicate things and we make them some sort of rite of passage that the common no-coiner has to jump through a bunch of hoops to prove their worth. I don't know. So I saw it as this thing to really simplify the approach, and it kind of started the discussion. I'm not going to say I'm the full reason it happened, but I triggered something and it got the conversation flowing. So the timing was right. We had Robbie on to do an interview after that. And so it's got a lot of momentum. I think it's a really great turn in the right direction. And when we think about how we communicate with the no-coiners or even the people who are dabbling in crypto, you really do have to put yourself in their shoes and think, I can't make this a burden on them. If I want them to understand it, it's on me to think about how I'm going to tell this story. And so this, you're going to hear some statistics that Robbie throws out there that I think are really great and I think convinced me the most from our conversation of it really is the way forward. So I got to always mention, you know, we're talking about privacy. And if you don't know by now, CakeWalled sponsors the show. And one of the best things about them is they're always leading with privacy. So they're going to have VPM or MWeb, whatever you want to call it, here in the next couple weeks, from my understanding. At least that's what the owner of the company said, like about 3 or 4 days ago. He said in a week. So I don't know. I'm guessing sometime in October at the latest. But what they have, you know, they've got great privacy. They started out as a Monero wallet. They support Bitcoin silent payments. It improves sender and receiver privacy for static Bitcoin addresses. And it's one of the first wallets to support silent payments. It's going to be really the first wallet supporting MWeb. Them and Litewallet are kind of in a race. It's open source, so you can use features like two-factor authentication. You can use your ledger. You can run custom nodes, Monero nodes, all that type of stuff. So go check them out. If you do, I think we're coming into an era where this privacy layers of obfuscation and just maintaining some of your data when it feels like everything's being extracted from you is really going to be important. And so getting used to using these tools, I think, is the best thing. Building up those habits. I was like Johnny Litecoin used to always say, like, you got to practice. Like, even if it's a little bit and you're sending it among friends, use the wallets, use the tools, because that's what gives you confidence to demonstrate it to people. You know, so when they do ask about it, you can show them, hey, download this wallet, download Cake Wallet. I'll send you some money. Here's how you open a wallet. Here's how you coin control, all that type of stuff. So appreciate you guys listening. I hope you enjoy it. Robbie's an entertaining guy, and I hope to have him on again in the near future. Thanks for listening as always. Like and subscribe to everything that we do on Twitter and YouTube. And I think we're going to have more like live Twitter stuff coming up. That seemed to do really well recently. So I think we're going to try and stick to Twitter as much as possible. So make sure you're following me there at LTC Underground. All right, bye. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Got another episode of Litecoin Underground. Today, we've got I think is going to be a pretty entertaining and important conversation to be had with Robbie Coleman from the Litecoin Foundation. As always, Animal is in here. He's become my perma co-host here and on Spaces. I think I'm wearing the same shirt I was earlier. Oh, it's under here because we're recording two episodes in the same day. So it's good stuff. But we're going to learn a little bit about VPM or virtual private money. A rebrand, I guess we'll call it. I don't know. We'll let Robbie define exactly what the heck we're going to call this thing. And I think it's an important conversation to have. I think one of the things that we've struggled with in Litecoin is really carving out our own identity. And we like to be silver to Bitcoin's gold. Well, we need to be something without referring to something else. So welcome, guys. Welcome, Robbie. Robert F. Coleman.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I think what we probably want to start out with, why don't you just cut your, so you're the creative director of the Litecoin Foundation. You've been there since the beginning, right?
Pretty close to. So joined in early 2018. So I flew over to San Fran for the first ever Litecoin Summit. And after that, they asked me to join and I said, yes, it was the best marriage proposal ever. So. Yeah, almost the start.
So you're, I think, because you came into Spaces on Wednesday, we talked a little bit about it, and I think you had said kind of your first order of business there was getting some kind of standardization, or what was kind of the idea behind that?
Yeah, so thanks for letting me hijack the Spaces during the week. It was a nice and welcome distraction from my everyday. I actually proactively... I had a creative agency back in, it was sort of founded in 2015, and it was called The Tokens. And what The Tokens did was I was trying to bring a level of, I guess, my professional background and history and expertise to a space which I was really excited about, being cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. And in 2015, I'm not sure whether you guys remember, but the marketing, branding and communications wasn't tip top for the space. So you jumped on someone's, you know, something could have a couple of $100 million markup or even $1 billion markup back then. And, you know, it would have a salt lamp as its logo. And then you jump on its website and it said interoperable, you know, cross-chain atomic farts or whatever. And you're like, whoa, I don't know what's going on. So what I set out to do was bring a level of, I guess, comprehension and cohesion to the space where I could. So I started working with exchanges, wallets, and we hadn't actually worked on a currency or a token. So I said to my staff, I said, you know, pick one. And they all picked one and nobody picked Litecoin, but I wanted Litecoin. So we chose Litecoin, and which was a bit of a, you know, what's that called? Nepotism, self-nepotism, narcissism, probably.
Tyranny.
I just say narcissism, right? Like,
yeah,
whatever, you know, tyranny. It's just narcissism.
Call it speed, yeah.
And we started researching, did our desktop research, did some, you know, a bit of qualitative research and obviously some quantitative research where we could with Reddit, and went out there and tried to find out what Litecoin meant to people, what words they associated with Litecoin, what those words then meant in terms of conveying it to other people, why they should use Litecoin, the use cases, the benefits, all that kind of stuff. So off the back of that, we wrote ourselves a brief, and that brief was to communicate a few things, trust, speed, and I think sort of we tried to define this, but the lightness being the simplicity of the code and I guess the simplicity and ease of use. So those three components informed our design brief. We then looked at all the existing permutations of the Litecoin logo and the colors and saw how important silver was, but also how against the backdrop of all the other 1,000 cryptocurrencies at that stage, it wasn't a color which stood out. It wasn't a color which popped. It wasn't a color which actually helped you identify any of the benefits or values of the currency. And so to cut a long story short, we produced 65 pages of strategy and branding. And I flew over to San Francisco without telling anyone, tried to tap Charlie on the shoulder, and got taken into a room very quickly by David Schwartz and yeah, said, hey, can I present a brand for Litecoin? And he said, you can, but it doesn't mean we're going to accept it. And, you know, to be honest, it's a decentralized community and blah, blah. And I said, I understand all that sort of stuff. I just want to show you. And yeah, he liked the thinking. He liked the rationale behind the change in the logo, the typeface and the colors. And what happened was, you know, it got endorsed by the Litecoin Foundation and subsequently picked up by the majority of exchanges and wallets.
Yeah, the gray almost, you think about it, looks like when you have a Twitter account and you don't have an avatar, it's that like gray background with a white cutout kind of.
Sure.
Which in a way might have its own kind of charm to it, but.
So there is, so we produced a white, a silver and a blue, the blue being the primary. And I mean, I'm not sure that you can see the books behind me, but there's a billion books, which I've never read about the psychology of color. But I've been doing branding for a long time and strategy for a long time. And blue naturally, that, well, this according to color science, evokes trust. But personally, I just like it. It's my favorite color. So I just, again, narcissism.
I do know there's like, they say like in packaging, if you're in retail packaging, blue stands out on the shelf. Like people notice it more than a green or a red or white or something like that.
It's actually orange and red that people notice the most, but
nope, it's blue. You're wrong. I'm sorry. Hey, wrong.
I'm happy to do an entire other interview on this.
You got the books. I heard something one time from a guy 10 years ago. Yeah. And I'm the authority over here.
Yeah.
But it complements, the blue complements Bitcoin's orange too. So if you have them together.
That's another thing that we looked at. So it's actually, if you consider there's tens of thousands of colors, if you take into consideration, and Grant, you probably know this better than me because you've probably heard from a guy at a party. But you know, if you include tints of a Pantone or a Hex as well. So there's a lot of variables and a lot of colors to choose from. But what we decided to do was take the most prominent orange from Bitcoin and start to look at what are complementary colors, and then looking at the hue of that actual color and the tint of that actual color and how they could sit side by side. So there's always, I mean, if you look at the original document, which I'm happy to share as well, I'm not sure whether I can show you, but you know, there's to within a degree, we looked at the angles of, you know, the L and the angles of the you know, the crossbar between the L as well, and you know what the shapes in between then became and what they elicited and how to create this idea of movement in a bit of typography without actually having little marks behind it like it's moving, you know, like a cartoon. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there was a lot of thought put into it, and yeah, that was my intro to the Litecoin Foundation, and I liked the community, and so I stayed.
And you're still here.
But so what made you choose it? Like you mentioned it was your choice. I'm just curious, what was it that drew you to it back then?
So if I'm not mistaken, at the time or when I selected it, it was definitely top five. I reckon it was maybe the fourth highest cap currency. I might be wrong, but it was definitely top five. And one of the things I liked about it was its simplicity and the fact that when I came to understand Bitcoin in sort of 2015, I could easily explain to myself why there needed to be a complement in Litecoin, why there, and you know, this analogy has been used since actually before the currency was deployed. So, you know, on the 9th of October was the first time the analogy silver to Bitcoin's gold was said by Charlie. So that's before the actual, you know, activation of Litecoin or the Genesis block being mined. The analogy still rings true for me at least. And I think for the vast majority when I explain it, because Bitcoin still is a better store of value in my opinion, but it did need a complement, something for everyday currency use. And the analogy, when I saw it in 2015 or 2016, I can't remember when it was, stuck out to me. And, usually I don't really like analogies, to be honest. And it, now they've become my thing. But it was a very easy way to explain something that was very difficult. And so that's why I liked Lyquin. And then I got to know that, you know, Charlie and his background, and I got to know the people in the community, and I got to know the people at the foundation. And I just really enjoyed hanging around.
Yeah, and I do want to get into VPM, but I do want to ask you this before we do that. Because at the Litecoin Summit, there was a guy from Coinbase who was probably as like Wall Street as you could expect a guy to be. Seems like a nice enough guy, but I was like, all right, this guy's living, he's living Wall Street.
John D'Agostino.
And, you know, one of the things he kind of hit on was, you know, Litecoin, you just need a story. You need a story, right? And I can't deny that's part of it, right? You need, we've been talking the last couple of weeks about Bell's Coin. Bell's Coin has this kind of interesting background story they can leverage to a certain degree. Do you think that's true? I mean, do you think that's something that's meaningful long term, or does it really just kind of in the short hype cycles meaningful, but it kind of wears off?
Yeah. So, all right. Well, this is going to be an interesting and political response. What it all depends on the story. So I know that seems like a cop out, but it's currently, I think that having a positioning is more important. So having a place in the space, sorry to rhyme, but having a place within a very, very busy, and it's never been more cluttered. There's tens of thousands, maybe someone said 100,000 cryptocurrencies.
There, there can be infinite coins, right? You can create them from nothing and cost you nothing. Yeah.
It's crazy, whatever it is, right? But say there's 1,000 currencies, 1,000 coins. I say, well, it's better off, you're better off actually having a positioning which helps you stand out. So, for example, I actually think the silver to Bitcoin's gold is really clever. I didn't come up with it, and I'm not sure Charlie thought it would stick, but the intent behind what he created, and by design, it was designed to be a complement to Bitcoin. And now I think that's the, given that Bitcoin has the greatest awareness and adoption, and it also has the greatest legacy, it, in my opinion, unless something dramatic happens, it's going to be synonymous with the space forever. You know, we might get to a point where it is Bitcoin and another one, you know, another coin, another currency. And I actually think that having Litecoin sit complementary to Bitcoin is the best narrative, is the best positioning. Now, when John was talking about a story, I think what he was actually talking about was, how do you make it tangible for institutions and an institutional audience? And I think that's an entirely different proposition. I'm not sure that is a story. That's not a story. That's a why you should buy me, why you should invest in me.
Yeah.
And personally, I think that's contradictory to the ethics behind creating a decentralized currency for the modern world, because there really are ethics behind what we're trying to do. And that's why it's always seemed at odds to me, everyone shouting for an ETF. You know, you say, you know, you topped the question, Grant, by saying it was the most Wall Street guy you could imagine. And I'm like, yeah. And that's why I didn't stick around to hear him finish talking.
Well, I think it's a weird thing, because I'm, you know, if you've only been to maybe one or two of my spaces, but for the most part, I try to avoid the price talk, because I feel like it's really distracting and pointless what a bunch of yahoos on Twitter want to say about price, right? But there, I mean, I think what it is that there is some, there's value to their, the price does have some meaning, and that it draws attention. And that you gain, I guess, gain some prominence. But what the Bit Refill guy, where I said we just interviewed him, no one's, they'll probably see that alongside this. What's been very interesting about it is been that Litecoin's been gaining all this adoption without the story. Like, it's actually pretty remarkable when you look at Litecoin, Bitcoin, and it's like basically stable coins and Ethereum are the,
yep,
are, that makes up 95%+ of what is going on their platform. And they understand stable coins, which that's like half their volume. And then,
yep,
Bitcoin and Ethereum are shrinking and Litecoin's growing.
But that's because of the utility. So I just go, right,
it works. That's what I mean. Like, at some point, the story matters to a degree, but what the foundation, whether it's been their focus or whatever, the net result of what they've been working on has been that Litecoin is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's on every exchange. And that's probably the number one thing it has going for it over so many other coins that could kind of do the same thing as far as like the function of, I want to move money from A to B,
but of course,
being trusted, being decentralized and being everywhere is so important. So I'm kind of, you know, the story thing I get, and I think something as Litecoin, we should, it's good for us to work on it and to be able to communicate it clearly, but it doesn't need to be a flashy story. It needs to be about its utility and its staying power.
I feel like there's also just a narrative issue, right? Like the Litecoin narrative right now, I feel like it's being controlled by the maxis, right? When you hear two people outside of the community talking about Litecoin, they're parroting the same three, you know, things, right? Like Charlie sold, it's just a copy paste, blah, blah, blah. It's like the same three topics, the same three points. And
yeah, the Charlie Soule thing is good. I look at that and go, yeah, and we're still here. Well, like, what?
I think there's just jumping back to the Coinbase thing. I read their filing to the CFTC for a futures trading product or an investment product. And one of the things which I found really, really interesting was in qualifying why Litecoin was, I guess, necessary, and I guess an investment product, which was, you know, something that would be beneficial to a lot of people. What they did was they identified that Litecoin, and over a period of time, I think it was 18 months or 2 years, I'd have to go back and have a look, but it was definitely over a year, and it was a consistent time frame that Litecoin was actually less unstable, so it had comparative stability against the price of oil and the price of gold. And so if you want to talk to institutions and people at an institutional level, and you say there's an investment product, so forget what it's called, there's an investment product which is more stable in terms of price and fluctuation over a protracted period of 18 months or 2 years than oil and gold, people be like, what is it? And you say Litecoin, and they're like, it's one of those cryptos. But that will eventually be shaken off. I think that will eventually be shaken off by institutional investors. But I thought it was a really interesting comparison. I had not thought about the volatility. I'd not thought about the price fluctuations in that way, comparative to two things which are, you know, arguably some of the most important and identifiable investment products out there, or assets out there. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very interesting. But going back to your three things, animal, do I call you animal? Animal? What do you go by?
Animal.
Animal. Okay, animal. I like that. I used to be called beast at school. I wasn't. I wish I was.
He apparently didn't intend this to be. He came into spaces, and that was what his tag was. And so I just called him animal, and he's just embraced it. He's got a tattoo and everything.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. Well, I'll show you later.
You can show me later. You'll have to blur. You have to blur the background. But I think going back to your three things, Charlie sold his coins. I think it's awesome, and I don't want to go off on a huge tangent about that. I think it was the responsible thing to do, and I think it was the correct thing to do, and it was just unfortunate timing. And to be honest, Litecoin could have gone to $5,000. Who knows?
I mean, it was excellent timing for him. So, but like, depending,
he's an expert trader. He doesn't play games.
I won't even indulge that.
Like, he, because I mean, the market did like suffer. It wasn't his fault though. It was like,
no, of course not.
There was the bans everywhere, and the market itself was just overextended.
He sold down over a period of weeks, if not months, and in tranches of, I think he did 100 or more tranches of Litecoin. So to be honest, he couldn't have shifted the market, and he did that quite deliberately so there would be no obvious fluctuation I guess volatility. But there's that one. Then there's the silver to Bitcoin's gold, which I think is great. And then what's the third trope? Oh, a copy paste.
The copy paste, yeah.
Well, hang on. I also look at it and I go, whether or not I believe Charlie, which, hey, Charlie. I do believe him, but I find it very fishy that he did. He understood Bitcoin. He researched Bitcoin. He started working on different projects, and then he released Litecoin all within a very short time frame. And even copy and paste and adapting the code to be what it is today, even that would have taken a little bit of time, and he just said it was one afternoon or overnight or something. So either he's a genius or he's a liar, whichever one. Hello, Charlie. But I genuinely don't see anything wrong with a copy and paste and an adaptation if you thought that the thing you were copying was awesome and worked and didn't require change. Change is ego. Ego, people with big egos who think they're brilliant, they're the ones who change things, have wholesale change on things because they think that their way is better way.
Every single product on the market today is taking somebody else's work and going, yeah, I think I could change. I'm going to modify this.
Like that's why they're called
a wooden wheel, and we put spokes in it.
But that's why they're called alts, right? They're called alts because they're, you know, alternative. They are a byproduct of Bitcoin. It's at some point they have been, you know, forked from Bitcoin.
All right, let's dive into VPM.
Okay,
so
another copy paste.
Another copy, yeah, basically, right? You just made a modification, not a total copy paste. You modified the N to an M.
Kind of.
So, all right.
Well, no reason to wholesale change it.
So give us, because you did this, you do have a speech. If you guys are really interested and you want to see, Robbie has a very colorful presentation at the summit. Go ahead and go watch that. I would recommend it. I think it's good. But if you want to give us just kind of a brief rundown of like the story behind how you kind of came to this, and maybe beyond that, what do you think is, what's the aspiration for VPM being how we refer to MWeb?
Sure. So what would it have been? March, I reckon March in 2024. So we're in September now. So it's the start of March where, you know, I think that MWeb is awesome. So I think it's what is missing. You say copy and paste. Well, this is one of the great iterations that Litecoin has made, in terms of its evolution, in my opinion. And it's probably the most important technological advancement, I think, in the space. So adding this optional confidential transaction capability. Now, in March, I sort of became obsessed with trying to see how I could get more people into MWeb to start using it, because I was becoming more conscious of privacy. I was becoming more conscious of, you know, the lack of freedom online and in real life that is being faced by a tremendous amount of people. And it really came to a head when I went to China for the first time and I saw firsthand the quite literally the surveillance on citizens. And I heard about social scores for the first time. And I heard about how they were being derived and calculated. So a social score being, you know, the one attributed to citizens within China, and how they rank in terms of their social score could be dictated by mental illness. It could be dictated by political beliefs, dissent from the government, whatever it may be. And I just thought, if I was there, I would score like -1 million, you know, Like I have so many, I have like mental ill nigh, you know what I mean? Like everyone in the US has ADHD, but here it's a little less common. You know, I've got that bipolar, obviously anxiety. Fuck, who doesn't have anxiety or depression or something? But like I'm pretty cooked in the brain, right? And so I would be the lowest caste in China. And when I was there, I was meeting with politicians. So I was shaking hands with people about clean energy, and I was in big rooms and in parliament buildings and or government buildings, I should say, and shaking hands with members of the CCP. And I always felt like I was being watched. And so I started looking, basically I became obsessed with China and surveillance and the use of VPNs in China and then globally. And it was one of the first times, if not the first time, I'd used a VPN out of necessity. And it became more obvious that I wasn't the only one using it out of necessity. It was just because I was on a trip to China from my beautiful, you know, fucking bubble in Australia. I was diving headfirst into the most surveilled state on earth. And it was really eye-opening. And I looked at VPNs and I started looking at virtual private networks and thinking about them, and then thinking tangentially about what MWeb was missing. And I think it was this visceral, this ability to conjure a visceral image with someone or to resonate with them for how they might want to use or need to use MWeb and its technology. And I was like, well, imagine if we could pull off something like a VPN where it's, you know, the equity is already built in to a name. People know what a virtual private network is or a VPN is. You know, 80%+ of internet users actually know what a VPN does. So they might not be able to articulate exactly what it is, but they know that it affords them relative privacy on the internet. And that's 1.6 billion people. 1.6 billion people use VPNs globally. And they're growing every single day. So the statistics will change in another few months. It'll likely hit 1.8 billion. You know, it's huge. And then I started playing around with names and was like, oh, what about VPN? And I thought, well, what does it say? It says virtual, which is what it is. It's a digital currency. It's digital cash. It was, you know, native and designed for the internet. Then, you know, you've got private, and private is, in my opinion, subjective. So I think it no longer means this stealth, incognito, nefarious, you know, lurking behind shadows. You can't really lurk behind a shadow because you create the shadow, but lurking behind whatever. It can be comparative and relative for the person. So you've got Safari, which has private browsing. Well, some people just use private browsing to, you know, look at a news site without paying or getting behind their paywall. It doesn't necessarily mean they're trying to, you know, send money to Al Qaeda. And then money. And it was either currency or money. And I started thinking about the differences between them. And I thought that money actually resonated much more with people. And I know it's a nuanced thing, but currency really does allude to having association with a government, whereas money is and always has been more universal and associated with freedom. So
they don't write songs about currency. They write songs about money.
Make money, money, make money, money, money. Make currency, currency, make currency, currency, currency. So VPN stuck out to me, and then I looked at the. I started becoming obsessed with VPNs within and Nelly and researching them quite heavily. And 1.6 billion people use them. 80% of people understand and can explain what they do when you activate them and use them online. And I thought that's crazy penetration. That's crazy. Yeah. And they have, you know, the top five reasons for using a VPN are the same as why you'd want to use a confidential opt-in confidential transaction protocol. And so I'm like, this would be too silly to not explore. And I thought it would be taken and the copyright's not taken. So there's the opportunity to protect it. I've already set up the top level domain so that there will be the ability just to send straight to, you know, robbie.vpm or animal.vpm. And it all just sort of clicked into place. So I wrote the white paper and built the website on the way to Nashville. It's a long plane. Nice. And then ditched my presentation about central bank digital currencies and presented this.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's there's some things that have happened in Litecoin's history that I think are a bit of, are they luck? Are they genius? Is it, you know, in hindsight, it looks genius. Like I've often said about Charlie saying to Dogecoin, hey, you should merge mine. In retrospect, that was, I think, a great decision. It was good for, obviously, Dogecoin, but I think it was good for Litecoin in the last few years as well. And even like changing the mining algorithm and to say, look, I'm not competing with Bitcoin. I'm complementing Bitcoin.
That's why it's not a copy-paste. The really small changes, well, the seemingly small changes that Charlie made to the code, the way it was mined, you know, the supply, circulating supply, and then the analogy, like you can't refute, was, really clever.
Well, the reason, and I'm saying that, I think MWeb is, I said the same thing when it first launched. I really felt like this is such a huge development to take a coin that is everywhere and add this optional privacy that isn't available with any of these other coins, certainly not with Bitcoin or Ethereum. And I'm telling you, I think your branding of this, I mean, you're saying that you've got the ability to maybe set up animal.light.vpm and send money to it.
It's already set up.
Huge. Yeah. I mean, things are just a, we'll send him, don't do it to Animal because he probably, I don't think you set him up yet, but we're not getting donations as we speak, but, and I like even the Indigo doing light space, I think is another, these are big steps forward that have happened in Litecoin the last few years. And, as you know, I'm obviously supportive of it, and, it's exciting. I love the story. I think it's a perfect story. I said, after we talked about it, my daughter the other night, I was like, what, you know what a VPN is, right? And she's 11. She's a YouTube kid. And all these YouTubers are advertising VPNs all the time. Like, I'm not joking. I'm not making this up. She was like 8 or 9, she came to me and she goes, we need to get NordVPN. I'm like, what? Why do we need NordVPN? She's like, can we just get NordVPN? I'm like, well, you don't even know what a VPN is. She's like, yeah, I do. I don't know.
Was she just drinking a crime?
Yeah. I mean, it was just the marketing, right? She's young, but she knew what I was talking about. So I said, if you knew what virtual private money instead of virtual private network, what do you think it would be? She was like, I don't know, like a ability to be a private communication, just like VPN. I'm keeping people out of my communication. And it's like, it's such an easy translation. Yeah. And I think that when you talk about reaching the masses of people that don't have time to go, well, here's how you set up a Lightning node, and this is what you got to do, and go get this wallet, and then you got to make sure the heading is this. Like, you can't do that with people. You got to make it as digestible as possible.
Quite honestly, I'm not technical, right? So when I see kernels, peg in, peg out, change header, MWeb, Mimble extension blocks, it all just goes over my head. It goes to tomorrow's list to find out what that thing is. But I think we have the luxury of talking about this, right? But in the vast majority of the world at the moment, they could actually use something like VPN to change their life and to quite honestly do things which they haven't been able to do in years, decades, and probably will never be able to do with the implementation of central bank digital currencies and greater internet censorship and all those things, all the factors which are coming to a head at once. And so something like a virtual private money is really important. So for me, I see this as not necessarily a tool for growth for Litecoin. Obviously, it will be one and it'll acquire new users, but really it's actually about providing a need and you know, catering to a need, a real need in the real world. So yeah, hopefully we don't have YouTubers, you know, shilling a VPN just because they want to get an affiliate link. No offense to you guys if you ever get affiliate money or anything. Cake Wallet's great, by the way. I love Cake. Let them use Cake Wallet. But the endorsement from YouTubers is not going to be the metric of success. The metric of success will be seeing millions of people use something which benefits them and actually goes a way to affording them, you know, but the basic human rights of digital privacy and financial freedom.
Yeah, you got anything, Animal? I got another thing I want to give, but if, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think the timing's like right as well. I feel like, especially with, you know, all this Telegram stuff with Pavel Durov and him being arrested in France for, you know, allowing this technology to be made available to the public.
Yeah,
it's insane. And I mean, like, we spoke about this briefly on Wednesday, but, you know, I was talking to some friends and some other people in my life about this situation, and they were coming at me being like, you know, but Telegram knows who the pedophiles are. You know, they know who Al-Qaeda is, right? They got to give up this information. And I'm thinking, you know, actually, if someone's engaged in like terrorism or like organized crime, they're not using Telegram. If someone's got a child pornography, they're not using Telegram to run that, are they? Like, it seems from a, like, from a technical perspective, like, it's a flawed application to begin with. And they would more likely use something, I don't know, like Signal or like another private messaging app that is. Anyways. Well,
I'm pretty sure the world's largest propagator of child pornography on the clear open net. So remember, there's obviously the dark net, which is still 90% of the internet or whatever it is. But on the clear and open net, I'm pretty sure Meta is still the biggest propagator of child pornography. You've got to understand that not everyone is technical and not everyone actually understands the how to use things like Telegram. And I think that the proliferation of child pornography has been, you know, sped up by Meta. And I'm pretty sure it is. I can check now, but I'm almost positive that Meta has the highest amount of child pornography on it.
Well, no, listen, no interview is complete without talking about child pornography for a while. But maybe a better example would be Twitter being banned in Brazil, and threats of even like Rumble being banned in Brazil.
Are you just worried that I'm going to talk about gay porn again? Is that why you're
not
changing?
Worried about it? No, if that's what you want.
Animal wants to talk about Telegram. But
no, I mean, my point with that was that this was the narrative that my friends and family were being fed by the likes of CNN and the Wall Street Journal. Like, they didn't, you know, it's the newscasters and the talking heads that bring this up and defend this type of behavior from France's government, right? When it's, in my opinion, it's censorship. It's society and the government devolving into like this, you know, a dictatorship, some kind of dystopia, like 1984.
Dude, right? If they were left to their own devices, there would be absolutely, they'd be shutting down these platforms. If they didn't have the public saying whoa, 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 and in some places the public doesn't have that ability to hit the pause button on their government.
You guys know about forget what it was called, but the phones and then the network that was actually taking it was the Fed set it up. What was it called? And it took down all the big drug dealers in, particularly in Australia. I think like the major drug. I hate not talking. I hate mumbling about things, which I'm actually. Anyway, I'll send you a link. That doesn't help. But the long story short was, they onboarded a bunch of criminals into this network, and it was actually surveilled from the get-go. So it had a backdoor the entire time to the FBI and all the major sort. You know,
Anom? Is it Anom app?
Yeah, it could have been something like
A N O M.
Yeah, type in drugs, Anom, hardware. That's what I
did. Phone system, yeah, Australia drug arrest, Anom app.
There you go.
And designed by the FBI, ensnares alleged criminals.
Thank you. Can you also type in child pornography and Facebook, please? I didn't want to do it on my search history.
Facebook, let me get my VPN up if I'm going to do that.
Yeah, do it. Chuck your VPN on. But I think that just goes to show that if they want to surveil something, they can. There's clever ways of doing certain things. But yeah, for my money, the greatest issue with surveillance will be central bank digital currencies, because you know China's already implemented the E1 really successfully. You know, ECNY is super successful. Everyone uses Alipay. You know, you don't use cash anywhere. And really? The issue becomes they know exactly where you are. They know exactly what you're spending your money on. They know exactly how much money you've got left. They know how much you're spending on gambling, drinking, donating to certain charities or anti-government protests, or you buy a drink next door to a you know anarchist bar or something like that, and all of a sudden you put it on a watch list. It's crazy. Because I can map your behavior, your movements, your travel, absolutely everything. So for me, money is like the ultimate, almost like Trojan horse. You know, the central bank digital currencies are going to be the greatest surveillance Trojan horse ever. And so it won't matter whether you're using Telegram, Signal, anything. They know what you're doing.
There's no escaping. There's no escaping at that point. Yeah.
No. So who cares what you're using to message? Because, I mean, if you think about it, the really clever people are using ciphers or they're using some sort of code. They don't have time to break down every single citizen's code or cipher or, you know, way of talking slang. I don't know whether you know the Parisian street language called Furlong, but when, you know, immigrants were being targeted by police, and this was decades ago, particularly those of Arab descent, what they did was they inverted words. So they actually inverted the word invert, which is l'envers. They inverted that to Verlon. But all through Paris, you'd hear words you thought you knew, but they weren't the thing. So you just keep walking. But it was a kind of code, a Parisian street language that, you know, we use in apps, we use online so that people can't immediately understand what we're talking about. The issue is with central bank digital currencies, there is no way of talking in code. There's no way of inverting, you know, I bought gay porn on the internet. I'm going to use it again because it is one which can get you killed. If you're in a really strict Muslim state, you can be thrown off a building. If you live in Russia, you'll have people knocking down your door and bashing you. You know, so I go, it's a real thing. And there is no way of saying, oh, no, I didn't actually buy gay porn. I bought YAG, ORP, or whatever the invert or the jumbled letters of gay porn, you know?
It's like inverting the screen where you can like show a video. You can show a movie on YouTube if you just flip the screen around, right?
Sure.
They can't copy. But there's no,
honestly, that's why I like the idea of the opt-in confidentiality and the obfuscation of sending amounts and addresses. That's what's beautiful about the technology that is MWeb that I'm you know advocating to be virtual private money. That the ability to change the receiving and sending address or the amounts and the amounts is really important. And I think
really it was really elegantly made.
Absolutely. And hats off to, you know, the team that did Mimblewimble in the first place. You know, again, they named themselves something silly. I can't remember who did that.
Who the original Potter creator of Mimblewimble was? Well, he named himself after the French name of shit. I've watched those movies with my kids, so. Voldemort was Tom Riddle, the kid.
No, it was Tom Elvis Judasa was the first.
Yeah. That was the French Tom Riddle.
I don't know. This is sort of this is cognitive load I don't need, you know, and to be honest, I don't care what your pseudonym or moniker means, you know.
And which is exactly the story you'd always have with people. You go, what is MWeb? Well, it's Mimblewimble. Mimblewimble's this spell. Oh. It's not in the movies of Harry Potter. Apparently it was in a book or like some off the cuff thing. And it is like to make things invisible. Okay. So that's the MW part. And yes, right, so by the time you say Mimblewimble, it's over. The conversation's over.
Can I just stop you there? We're talking about a currency, which people, so it's real money. So I think, you know, the biggest barrier to cryptocurrency at the moment still is people don't understand it because they don't understand what blockchain is and blah, blah, blah. And they also think it's for criminals or whatever. So there's all those things you've already got to debunk. And then you go, oh, no, but trust this thing, right? Trust this technology. It's named after a spell in a book. Anyway, it's really cool, right?
Children's book.
It's definitely not a scam, and it's definitely something which is really clever, I promise you, right? And then we add this EB on the end, but don't really worry about that. That's extension blocks. It's this thing that it doesn't matter. It's about scalability and stuff. So, but MWeb, I mean, it makes total sense, right? Like, you guys get it? Don't you? Mimblewimble extension blocks. You get that. What are you, dumb? Mm-hmm. And then people love feeling dumb, right? I love being made to feel dumb, especially when it's like I'm using a technology and it's like it's something which I'm relying on. Like, so say I'm, I don't know, a rubber plantation worker who's moved to Malaysia to send money back home to Bangladesh. Just an edge case. It's not an edge case because there's tens of millions of people in who have done that and moved. They're called foreign workers. Now, what foreign workers used to do is they used to send money back home using Western Union. Problem with Western Union is there's a 15% fee or spread on the conversion and the FX back to Bangladesh. Now, then there was the advent of the neobank, and now neobanks are taking the piss. Well, what could solve this? Oh, I don't know. A currency which you could send within minutes and cost less than a cent, no matter what amount you're sending, and it's never gone down, and it's not a central bank. You know, you don't need a bank account, so unbanked can use it and all this kind of. It's like, that sounds brilliant, right? But get this, right? Why, if I'm a rubber plantation worker and I'm sending back money home, which is really important, do you think I'm going to trust something which is a spell from Harry Potter that also has extension blocks on the back? Give me a break. So we've got to be real and go, who cares about what we think about the name? Who cares about what we understand, right? We're on a podcast or whatever this is talking about cryptocurrency. Everyone on this call understands what's happening.
Yeah.
It's about the millions and billions of people that don't. And so you need to have the lowest common denominator and be able to talk to them in a language they understand and borrow equity from absolutely every single technology that has ever been created and has high penetration, and that is a VPN.
Yeah, dude, I said that on Wednesday. The reason Satoshi called it Bitcoin is because he knew he had to translate it to the real world. And if he called it BitLedger, he'll be like, what the fuck is a ledger? Dude, most people would have no idea. You hear ledger and they go, I'm out. I get coin. I get that. And people Coin's get good. VPN. Coin is good. Coin is good.
Yeah, it gets rid of the gatekeeping, right? Because there's this digital divide, and I mean, people on the other side of it. Like, I'm a technical person, but when I was doing tech support, a lot of my clients were people that just didn't get it, right? And it's the majority of them.
I'm willing to publicly say it. I got to bug up my ass about developers in general for a couple of reasons. They're technical people, and they're smart. They're smart in their field. They get it. They're a little bit, couple things. They're very paranoid, like you said, about change or like saying something that I can't stand behind 10,000% with every single use case in the world. So they like get very freaked out. Like, well, what if we promise privacy and they're not getting privacy? Like, they think like, Jesus Christ, dude, we're just trying to communicate to people a generic word that they can understand. Right. And that's the divide between this technical and the real world of humans communicating with each other. These, at the end of the day, these are tools that humans have to use. And if no humans understand it, it's, you can build the greatest thing in the world, but it doesn't matter because the humans won't use it. You need to understand.
What's the point in having a wonderful tech if no one's going to use it? So there's, well,
because the other part is just like anybody who creates things, they, I don't know if this is a technical term, fall in love with the smell of their own farts. Have you ever heard that one before? They think they're so brilliant that the thing they created is perfect for them. And they don't understand that it doesn't matter. You're not the customer. There's 8 billion people out there that are the customer.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a number of things there. I go, historically, when people have been the founders or the creators of things and they're the technical people and they don't have a counterpart who's like a real human, it doesn't necessarily go that well, right? And it's when someone comes along who can bridge the gap, who understands what the literal people mean, but also understand what everyday people mean, and bridging the gap and then finding a happy medium. I'm not saying we get rid of MWeb. So for the people, for the 23 or 24 people that use MWeb, sorry, that's a little joke.
70,000 coins on there, by the way. Don't.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. Anyway, if you look at the data, I'm actually not sure how many people actually use it, but it's not beyond the hundreds, right? So why put so much effort into something? Why put 2.5 years of work in? That's since it's been activated, or 2 years since it's been activated, right? And we still haven't hit a point where, you know, the smallest meme coin would be doing more and have more users than Litecoin's MWeb. And this is a brilliant technology. I'm like, let's do it justice and get it in the hands of the most number of people that we can. The other thing is, there's no reason why MWeb can't coexist with VPM. And that's, it's never been my intent. And you said at the top of the discussion, you know, here to Robbie Coleman, here to discuss the rebrand or something of, I think you said rebrand, but that's the real issue, is that it's not a rebrand. It's just for the vast majority of the world, I'm talking 99.9999999 recurring for probably another 50, and then you can stop and do like 8 or whatever. But for the vast majority of the world, they don't give a shit about MWeb, and they don't care. And we market this thing called VPM, and they hear about this thing VPM. It's not going to destroy anyone's life who's currently using MWeb. It's not going to destroy any of the developers' lives, any of the wallets' lives. You know, people don't care what's at the front of the address. They really don't. They care that this thing works, you know? And so they coexist. MWeb is the base layer. MWeb is the protocol. MWeb is the tech. But, you know, I'm not going to open up my iPhone and talk about every single little chip in there and all. Like, it's the iPhone.
But so, okay, how do we get this message out then? Say VPN takes off within the community. All right, fine. But no one, the 1.8 billion people are not watching this show.
No.
What is, like...
2 million.
2 million?
2 million now.
2 million people using a VPN or whatever? Like, yeah.
The plan? Yeah. The plan, sorry to cut you off. Animal, it's a really good point, right? We're not, so given that it's decentralized currency in Litecoin and the foundation is a not-for-profit, surprise, there's no $1 billion marketing budget. You know, we're not Barbie. We can't, you know, get Margot Robbie to make a movie and then we sell a lot of dolls and all that kind of stuff, right? You know, there is
money to put billboards up.
VPN, very plastic,
right? Like,
so it costs money, right? Like, this is what I've been doing for my, I want to say career, but it's not career, is figuring out with no money how to get in front of the most number of people. And the way I want to, you know, and hopefully just no one kills this or sullies it, but, the obvious way is to fish where the fish are. And so to actually talk to VPNs and look at integrating with a VPN. So, for instance, Proton has released, and it's only a couple of days old, But Proton's actually released a custodial wallet for Bitcoin. Proton's huge. Proton's got a massive user base. And they're very well known in the security space. So it would be partnering with them. You know, why would you not fish where the fish are? Partnering with a Proton or a Nord or a, you know, FreeVPN, you know, or all of them, and providing the ability for their users to turnkey while they're using the service, actually use it to send money as well and receive money and do commerce. And, you know, because it's not just individuals using VPNs, it's also businesses. So businesses use it as well. And you've got to think, well, what about when they want to do commerce internationally, but they can't because, you know, it's been restricted by their central bank digital currency is CBDC. But, you know, in China, you can only send a certain amount of money overseas. And sometimes they restrict it entirely, depending on the individual or the business. And so for trade to be free, I mean, you know, you'd need to use something like a VPN. Why not use it while you're using your VPN? And I think it's kind of, they're synonymous, or hopefully make them synonymous.
Yeah, it'd be wild, man. If there was a Proton wallet for MWeb, it's called VPN. Yeah.
I'm not going to promise anything, but it would be that's been the intent. So I never raise an idea without an idea. So as in, like, to be honest, it would take so long to build equity in VPM unless there was a really quick path to acquiring a lot of people. And one of the quick paths is, I guess, lowering the barrier to entry and the level of comprehension. And I think that the name does that. And a website, which, I mean, I built the current website on a plane, so, and wrote the copy and stuff, so it's not brilliant and it needs redoing. And, you know, we're already making plans on how to make that more appealing and accessible. But then the next step is actually, all right, well, if you don't have a marketing budget, if you don't have a brand building budget, then why not fish where the fish are in terms of in a place where they're using an existing technology or there's an existing need or a desire, and go, hey, community that's already looking for this exact thing, do you want to use the exact thing you were looking for? And so, you know, with 1.6 billion people using a VPN, I think that VPNs are a great place to start.
Yeah, it's like you're literally saying, hey, you like some privacy in your communication. Yeah. What if you could have that in money as well? Oh, I didn't know that was possible. Okay, cool. Right? Like
money choice.
Making it easy and approachable. And the fact that Litecoin is everywhere. Like, I think that's something we don't, as much as we say we are a small community. I mean, if you go on the internet, it's pretty small comparatively to a lot of communities, but that bit refill thing this morning, when you looked at Australia, East Asia, Middle East, Africa, Europe, South America, North America, they broke it out pretty consistently. Litecoin was about 10% of the transactions across all of those different locations. Like, some places Binance Pay was huge. Some places it was all stable coins. Like, Lightning is big down in obviously El Salvador. And like, they had something in Argentina. But I mean, it's in everybody's pocket. In the United States, PayPal is in everybody's pocket. Venmo is in everybody's pocket. And so that Litecoin is everywhere. It's already there, whether these people know it or not. And so when you start to put this in front of them and say something you already have access to is, we can create a very simple bridge.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's the underground, like a light London underground, like the train station, like a little hub. it's there. I mean, it's there waiting for you to use it. And I think it's just a matter of making it approachable for people.
I guess the other thing is, does it need to be always coupled to Litecoin? So Litecoin will benefit because obviously it is, you know, MWeb's only around on Litecoin at the moment and only activated on Litecoin. But I guess there's also some merit in being able to decouple it. So being able to have VPM stand by itself, it's almost like having two chains, you know.
This is the ego part that's so hard to get through. And I 1,000% agree with you. People are like, they have to know it's Litecoin. They have to know it's MWeb. No, they don't. Really abstracting that away and saying you can send value. I mean, there's always going to be this thing where you're tying it. There's a market and they'll be confused. Like, wait, why did the value of my thing go down overnight or up? But, you know, it doesn't need to be, you don't need to lead with it, right? Because that's not the key thing they're getting.
Just on that grant, though. Hang on. In the countries where I'm talking, in the regions I'm talking, where it would be most useful, it's like Litecoin going down by, you know, a couple of dollars, you know, so a couple of percent in a day, comparative to their fiat currency, which is experiencing in a lot of places hyperinflation. It's like, mate, that is stable. And again, I go back to, you know, the volatility of gold and oil. And you look at the fact that there was the US dollar was gold standard until the 70s or whatever it is. And it's like, well, hang on, the same asset class that was being used to back the US dollar, it has comparative volatility. In fact, it is more volatile than Litecoin. And so I'm also looking at it going, well, Litecoin, while everyone wants the price to go to the moon, I actually want it to stay stable.
I was saying that because what I was saying is the value they're getting out of it isn't the speculative value. They're seeing value beyond the dollars and cents and saying, I want this so I can actually use it in a private manner. Like, that's the utility I'm getting. And until you can communicate the utility, it's all speculation. And we need to explain to people, hey, you can use this money with nobody's permission. You don't need a bank. You can hold it yourself. Like, these are things that are actually pretty radical up until 15 years ago. You know what I mean? And pretty wild. So, go ahead. Sorry.
I think what you're saying is the utility. And then I go, well, the utility is really obvious with VPN. You know, it's virtual. So it's not in my hands, you know, it's virtual, and people are very familiar with the idea of virtual money. And to be honest, the amount of physical cash in the world is disappearing. So it's like, it is becoming just the everyday, and particularly for the next generation, they probably won't even know what a real banknote looks like, you know. They will, but you know what I mean. And then you've got the private component, and, you know, that is obvious what it means, and money is obvious what it means. So I'm like, it spells out the utility. It spells out, you know, what it's going to look like, how it's going to act, how it's going to behave, where it's going to behave, where it's going to live, all those sorts of things built into an acronym and then extrapolated out into the explanatory phrase of virtual private money. I'm like, it does that.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah. It does it quickly. Cause I mean, I was trying to explain to someone the virtues of merge mining, and it's not easy. Someone without a background in crypto, like, who cares? Like, that's the answer. Like, so what? But yeah, security, dude, it's a security. He's like, I don't get it. Pardon?
It's the next one for me to do, merge mining. Let me just write that down.
Like it sounds like massive online multiplayer online role playing game, MMO, something, whatever it is. Use that for merge. All right.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I think the best statistic you've thrown out in the last time, a few times we talked, is there's 1.6 billion people using it. And
we're not using VPM yet, but.
And that's, in my opinion, it's a mic drop. That's all you need to know, is it instantly translates to about 20% of the globe. So,
well, yeah, it's over half of the world's internet users. So if you think that a lot of the globe is 80 plus years old, and a lot of the globe is also, you know, 7 years and younger, it's and also a lot of the globe doesn't have internet still, not a lot, but there is still a bit. It's over 50% of the world's internet users.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm excited for it. And I think I'm hopeful we're going to see, like, you know, Cakewalt's at least throwing the idea out there. Will they adopt it to be VPM? That would be very cool. And maybe we'll have a little, I think we're actually going to have them on at some point once this is fully live on Cake Wallet. We'll have a space. We'll do this or a spaces, and, you know, to have you in would be cool, especially if they do name, if they don't name it VPN, I won't invite you, but.
I'm just thinking, you know, like Cake Wallet's great. And I think Cake Wallet's amazing. And Cake Wallet could be one of the really easy to use wallets if it adopted VPM. So anyway, up to Cake Wallet if they want to have something which is easy to understand and easy to use.
They're great. They're on the forefront. The more people they can get to use privacy, I know they're for it. So because they are a sponsor of the show, while you guys are watching, we're going to end it on this. Cake Wallet, go download it. You can buy in the wallet. You can swap into different currencies. You can buy gift cards. It really is. Honestly, it's my go-to for my mobile wallet. No offense, Light Wallet, but I like Cake Wallet. Beautiful user interface. So, all right, guys, I think that's good. I don't want to beat a dead horse. We all agree VPM is the future, and that's all there is to it. And if we think it, then that's just fact.
And, you know, please check out vpm.run. Yes. And if you've got any feedback or suggestions or comments or, you know, anything, my email's on there, robbie@litecoin.net. And, yeah, you can say whatever you want. I'm open to discussions and everything. So thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Robbie.
Thank you.
See you later.